Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we meet again. Today is Tuesday, 19th of May, 2020. We will continue with our Heart Sutta class. We are at page 77, lesson 13 of the Heart Sutta class. But before we start, we will compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Then after that, we will have our half an hour of meditation before we officially start our Heart Sutta class. Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Pho. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Milo Pho. Namo Milo Pho. Namo Milo Pho. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Tizang Wang Pusa. Namo Tizang Wang Pusa. Namo Tizang Wang Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Dodang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Saukasango Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dityampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dityampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dityampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu michachara veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Surameraya maca pama datana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajan. Budang Pujemi. Damang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you all can be seated. We can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation. So I will give you some instruction. Then after that, maybe you can commence your meditation. So as usual, remember the four support for awareness-based meditation. You just relax. Relax body and mind completely. Yeah. So the first support of relaxation is very important. Relax into every mind state that arise. Yeah. Whatever that arise, just relax. Relax means completely free your body and mind. Yeah. It's like at ease. Yeah. You have nothing to disturb you or worry about you. You just feel relaxed. Relax. Then don't think. Yeah. Then maintain awareness. Maintain awareness means whatever sankhara activity or thought process that is going on, you just let it be. It will slow down. Yeah. If your spiritual faculty is already developed, then this sankhara activity like hardly exists. Even if it exists, it's very little. Yeah. Especially those who has the ability to be mindful in the midst of life, the daily mindfulness already developed and stabilized, then you will find that the formal meditation is very easy. Your mind settles down very fast. Then the other aspect is, after you have relaxed, you maintain awareness. Awareness means whatever sense experience that come to you, especially tactile, just aware. Don't go and continue to proliferate your thought or think. Just aware. It can be tactile or anything, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, or whatever from the senses. Just aware. Yeah. Then you have a particular object of meditation that you are used to. You just maintain awareness on it, develop it, like anapanasati or whatever you are familiar with. Even those who do rising, falling, you can just stay there, maintain awareness of the object of meditation. You can also use the dynamic hand method or Buddha or Amitabha or whatever. Yeah. The key is to anchor your mind there so that it can help you stabilize your mindfulness or awareness. Yeah. Then until the object of meditation become like very subtle, like your breathing become very subtle, like no more breathing. Your rising and falling also become very subtle, no more rising and falling. Then whatever that you are aware of, just the awareness and the object of meditation, they become one. Then after that, you let it silent. Silent means exactly like those who have the spiritual faculty developed. You just relax and maintain awareness. Whatever that you can pick up, like I say, tactile or whatever, just aware. Then you are doing the anapanasati. The anapanasati will become very quiet and very still, like no more movement. And then you just stay at the silent breath or the subtle breathing. Stay there, like no breathing. The mind just aware there. The free mind can stay there until it stabilizes. Then your mind naturally enters sati. When your mind enters sati, you will know whatever movement or activity that is going on within your kaya, your awareness will pick it out. It's like magnify. Then your awareness like sharpen, heighten, more refined. And then you realize very easy to be aware. Whatever activity or movement, your mind that is in sati can be aware of it. So that is what you have to do. Relax, aware. Then the third support is 24 hours if possible. Maintain the awareness for as long as you can. Don't try to know. Just let things be silent. Until the silent mind, the true mind, arise. It can only arise when all your thinking or sankhara activity come to a standstill, means no more movement, no more. And then you can realize the silence, the true tranquility and stillness of mind within. And that is your true mind. Stabilize that and use it to meditate. That's how you meditate. Okay, now you are off the light and we can start the meditation. I will set the alarm now, 30 minutes from now. Okay. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to develop and continue to stabilize them so that in the midst of life, you are in that mind state. We call it heedfulness. Yeah. Your mind is ever mindful, constantly meditative. Yeah. So for it to be ever mindful, you need to train the mind to stabilize it so that the mindfulness stabilize and become ever mindful. Then you can use it to cultivate noble eightfold path, to develop wisdom, to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is mainly to cultivate the noble eightfold path. And there are various types of practices that the Buddha has taught, especially the four foundation of mindfulness. Initially, it's first turning, second turning, and third turning wisdom of the Four Noble Truths. That one, you need to go into the listening to the true Dhamma, step two of Avijja Sutta. So when you listen to Dhamma, you develop first turning wisdom. Then when you reflect and contemplate deep into it, you develop second turning wisdom. Wisdom born of contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into the Four Noble Truths that the Buddha has proclaimed. That will give rise to the second type of wisdom called Chittamaya Panya. The first wisdom, one of the first turning listening, is Sutamaya Panya, means wisdom born of hearing the sutta as taught by the Buddha. Then finally, when you develop daily mindfulness, when you cultivate Satipatthana Sutta, you will develop the third turning wisdom, which is Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of Bhavana. Bhavana is the meditative training. So all this will be clear. When you understand this, you will know how to meditate. So formal meditation is to stabilize the mind until it's ever mindful, until the mind enters a deep, so that your daily mindfulness is very stable. Then use it to cultivate noble eightfold path while going through life, while in the midst of career, living your life. So all this is meditation. That's the reason why you need a very comprehensive daily religious routine to anchor your cultivation so that throughout the day you are cultivating mindfulness, the four foundation, the reflection, the contemplation, listening to the Dhamma, then chanting, then bowing, walking meditation, then all the four posture, then the connecting movement between the four posture leading to sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all activity between the four postures. Yeah. So this is just a summary of what you need to do. Huh? Okay, now we will go to the chanting. Turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalisu atra kacantu devata sadamang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokadang dhamma sabanan kalo ayam badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa iti peso bhagava arahang sammasambuddho vija charana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehi paseko opanayiko pacatang veditato venohiti supatipano bhagavato sakkasango ujupatipano bhagavato sakkasango nyaya patipano bhagavato sakkasango samichi patipano bhagavato sakkasango yadidang chatari purisa yukani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato sakkasango ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anutarang punya ketang lokasati sadu sadu sadhu. Okay, now we'll continue from where we started. We are at this page 77, lesson 13, Heart Sutta. So tonight sharing is mainly on Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23. Then later on, verse 1, verse 2, and 183. Yeah? These are the very important Dhammapada verses that can help you understand the teaching. What happened?
Yeah.
Huh? Jayanta, any problem? Just now you were showing something. What was it? You can hear me? Can you hear me? Ah, good. Then no problem. Then I will start. Dhammapada verse on heedfulness. Within the Dhammapada verse, there are 423 verses of truth that the Buddha has actually taught. They stand up to the test of time. They are can you hear now? Is it okay now? Ah, good.
No,
okay. Ah, okay. Just now, I think something wrong with the internet. So, okay, I will repeat the 1.1. Lesson 13, Heart Sutta, page 77. Dhammapada verses on heedfulness, verses 21, 22, 23. So, this Dhammapada verses, there are 423 verses altogether. And these are the truth that the Buddha has spoken over the last 45 years of his teaching or sharing. And these are truth that last for eternity. They are evergreen. That's why the Buddha's teaching is very unique. And very special for us normal human being, for us to come up with even one or two truth that can last for eternity is not easy. But the Buddha was able to come up with 423 Dhammapada verses that are evergreen, that will be last and the stand of time. Means it will never become obsolete. And out of this 423, there are 20 verses that are classified under Appamada or heedfulness. They are verse 20 to verse 40. And these 20 verses on heedfulness are very powerful, very important. But what I like most are the first three, verses 21, 22, and 23. I will go through with you so that you will understand why the Buddha's teaching is so unique. And to really understand his teaching, to develop the wisdom, you must have this very important mind state, which the Buddha called Appamada or heedfulness. So heedfulness means a mind that is constantly meditative and ever mindful. To develop the clear understanding and wisdom, we are seeing things as they are. Understanding the importance of heedfulness, we are understanding the following important Dhammapada verses. Dhammapada verse 21. The Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die. The heedless are as if dead. So based on this first Dhammapada verse, verse 21, on Appamada Vagga, we will understand the importance of heedfulness. Whereas the Buddha really emphasized the importance of heedfulness. He said heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful do not die. So if you are not heedful, you don't stand any chance to develop the enlightenment or the cultivation of his teaching. That is the extent of its importance. And he said very clearly, without heedfulness, you become heedless. And the heedless are as if dead. Means spiritually, you are as if dead. You don't stand a chance in the spiritual deep. The heedless are as if dead. Heedlessness is the path to the dead. So never be heedless. The moment you are not heedful, you are not able to cultivate the spiritual teaching. You cannot develop the understanding of his teaching and the enlightenment. Okay? Then we move on to Dhammapada verse 22. Dhammapada verse 22 and 23 re-emphasize what the Buddha said under verse 21. The Buddha said, after you have understand the importance of heedfulness, you must distinctly understand the difference between heedfulness and heedlessness. When you understand clearly, distinctly, the difference, the wise one will intend on heedfulness. If they intend on heedfulness, they will rejoice in the realm of the Aryas or the enlightened ones. So you are destined for enlightenment. That's the reason why you must have this heedfulness. Okay, then we go on to the next one. Dhammapada verse 23. Dhammapada verse 23 define what heedfulness is. So according to the Buddha, under Dhammapada verse 23, he said, the constantly meditative, the ever mindful, and the steadfast one, they will realize the bond-free supreme Nibbana. So this is what heedfulness is all about. So heedfulness has two parts. First part is constantly meditative. Second part is ever mindful. And the steadfast one means the one that hold on to these two practices. They will definitely, 100% confirmed by the Buddha, realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana. So how can we develop heedfulness? We have to go back to this Dhammapada verse 23. If we know this Dhammapada verse 23, then we know to start meditation, to start developing the mind state that can allow us to understand meditation as taught by the Buddha, we need to train our mind to develop sati, mindfulness. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. That's the reason why I have been emphasizing on this all the time, or teaching you know, the meditation. So develop the training to be mindful, to be aware. That's why I just relax, silent, aware, to stabilize that mindfulness. Then if you need object of meditation or skillful means, then you can use it to anchor your mind so that sati can be developed. Then stabilize that sati until your object of meditation become very subtle, very quiet, very still. Then your mind enters sati. Mind enters sati means your mindfulness has stabilized. You have become ever mindful in the midst of life because your mind has entered sati. It is always aware. Every moment of hearing, seeing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, you are aware. There is mindfulness. So when you are able to be in that state of ever mindful state, then you can meditate. Then you can use it to meditate, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And Noble Eightfold Path will include the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. Means mindfulness of four postures, sati, sampajana, and all the various four foundation of mindfulness training. Finally, accumulating into the mindfulness of the last category of Dhammanupassana, which is Four Noble Truths, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. And that will include the Noble Eightfold Path. Mm. So this is what meditation is all about. Ever mindful, constantly meditating. That's why it's a full-time job. Throughout the day, you must develop it so that you are in that state of heedfulness. You are ever mindful, constantly meditating. So this will cover Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, and you will understand the importance of it. And now we go on to the next one, which is Dhammapada verse 1. Dhammapada verse 1 leads to suffering, whereas Dhammapada verse 2 leads to happiness. These are the first two Dhammapada verses. We call it the twin verses. So these twin verses is very important. The Buddha, first and foremost, he introduced his Dhammapada verse 1, then verse 2, the twin verse. It is to let you straight away develop the understanding of life. Because according to the Buddha, we hold the key to our own life destiny. To be happy or to be unhappy is entirely our choice. So you need to make that decision upfront. So his teaching is very simple. He straight away points to us that our mind is very important. Here he said, your mundane mind. Your mundane mind, or the thinking mind, or the dependent originating mind, the conditioned arising mind, is the forerunner of all things, is it? Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. If one speak, act, and think with a wicked mind, an unwholesome mind, that is not trained or heedless, then the three evil roots will be there. The three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion will be there. Then it was conditioned suffering. And then suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hoof of the carts, of the block cart. So this is very, very important. If you know your mind is so important because it is the forerunner of all things, when mind arises, all things arise. Everything arises from the mind. In Mahayana, they call it 一切一切唯心造. Everything that arises is created by the mind. 心造成的. So when you understand that, you will understand the importance of training this mind. Where if you are heedless, if you don't train this mind, then it will condition suffering. Your heedlessness will condition Dhammapada verse 1. So if mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief, and everything arises from the mind. So if you don't train your mind, you will act, speak, and think with a wicked mind, an unwholesome mind, that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So the heedless mind will have this evil root. Then suffering will follow you like the wheel that follow the hoof of the blockers wheel. Then the opposite twin verse is verse 2 that leads to happiness. He said, if you understand the importance of mind, then he repeats, your mind, the mundane mind, the thinking mind, is the forerunner of all things. Mind is cheap. Everything arises from the mind. So if you train your mind, you develop heedfulness. You will act, speak, and think with a pure mind or a wholesome mind or a heedful mind that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then there is no negativity of karma. Then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So your life, you decide which Dhammapada verse you want to follow. My advice is follow Dhammapada verse 2 and avoid Dhammapada verse 1. then your life will be beautiful. So it's very easy to transform your life, to change your life, to improve your life. Once you understand the big difference between Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, you will know how to live life. You will know how to make the appropriate decision. The decision to train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, constantly meditating, so that you are incapable of evil, so that you can take care of mind. When you take care of mind take care of your karma. Then karma take care of your life. This is the reason why, from the right view with regards to the law of karma, the Buddha came up with his teaching, his advice, to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. To avoid all evil, you have to avoid Dhammapada verse 1. And how to do it? You have to keep your precept. Because when you violate your precept, it constitutes major evil. That's why Dhammapada verse 1 is been highlighted as the first of the 423 verses. That if you want to change your life, improve your life, transform it for the better, you need to train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, so that you can cultivate wholesomeness, to develop the parami, to develop the Noble Eightfold Path factors, leading to wholesomeness and wisdom. Then your life will transform. Then you will be on the path to cultivate Dhammapada verse 2. Then happiness will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. Then when you continue to apply this heedfulness to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, you will develop wisdom to free your mind, to liberate your mind so that you can become enlightened, awakened, so that you need not suffer anymore, so that you can be always happy, peaceful, tranquil, still, and just aware. So that you can live the noble life of enlightened being. So that you can have all the noble qualities of enlightened being. You will have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factors. So these are the reason why all these Dhammapada verses are so important. Then return to the next section, 2.3. Why is the teaching or Dhamma as taught by the Buddha during his time become different as it gets passed down over the years? So this is a very good question. So I replied, because the Dhamma was handed down or passed down, we are using words and speeches which are verbal in nature. And as we all know, words are subject to various types of interpretation, hence the deviation. For example, when asked about what is the First Noble Truth as taught by the Buddha, more often than not, we get the standard answer or very popularly accepted answer, life is suffering. And this is very dangerous because the Buddha never said that life is suffering. The Buddha instead proclaimed the First Noble Truth. He said, there is a First Noble Truth of dukkha that explains clearly what suffering or dukkha is. And according to Lord Buddha, he said under the First Noble Truth, there are eight realities or conditions in life and existence that can give rise to suffering when one confronts them without wisdom. You only suffer when you don't have the wisdom, when you don't understand his teaching. So that is a big difference. He never said life is suffering. What he said is, under the First Noble Truth, the prevalence of suffering. Your suffering is everywhere. You don't have the wisdom. You confront the eight reality, which is what life is all about, the reality of life and existence. Yeah. The eight reality summarized to us all of the realities of life and existence. That's why I say his teaching is very beautiful. Where all of our mundane existential world life, we call it the mundane aspect of living, they are all described under the First Noble Truth, reality. So the eight conditions, if you check through them, all of life are defined under them. So once you have this understanding, you will know the First Noble Truth is like explaining to us the reality of life and existence. If we live long enough, we will have to confront this eight reality. Each and every one of us, no exception. So this is a common reality. The First Noble Truth applies to all beings. No one is exempted. So if it's a reality, when we confront them, we have to understand. We have to accept this reality. And we have to develop the wisdom so that we are not afflicted by them. So that we can transcend them. We can go beyond them. That is the deep meaning of the First Noble Truth of Dukkha. It's not about life is suffering. That's the reason why a lot of times or occasion in life, other religions tend to make fun of Buddhism, or they tend to comment in a very negative, adverse aspect on Buddhism. There is one particular religion, I think, from the West. They like to compare and tell the devotee, which will you choose? If you go to Buddhism, they don't teach you anything except suffering. Then they keep on telling you life is suffering. Then they say they pray to idol. They are very good at idol worshipping. They worship the statue, the idol. So when they say all this, Buddhists who don't have the understanding of the true teachings of Sakyamuni Buddha, they don't know how to reply. Then when they start to say, whereas if you come to their teaching, their God teaches love and compassion. No more of those boring ideas of suffering. Then they got beautiful hymns, fellowship. Then a lot of very beautiful events and other things. That's the reason how they actually attract followers. But as Buddhists, you have to understand the Buddha's teaching so that you can stand up to all this type of adverse comment. Then you will start to develop the clear understanding that as Buddhists, we are indeed very blessed, very fortunate, because we have a teacher that is fully enlightened, not only enlightened. He is perfect in enlightenment, and he is the most virtuous and the most wise living being ever to be born. And because of his unique quality, he can give us this teaching, which is like a secret of life to me. The secret of life in the sense that he explained to us the prevalence of suffering, and he highlighted this First Noble Truth reality, the noble truth of suffering, so that you are prepared for it. He never said life is suffering. He said life has a lot of reality that you need to confront. But when you confront them without wisdom, you suffer. And this reality, most Buddhists are familiar. But non-Buddhists may not be familiar. That's why we are very blessed. We have been taught in the teaching, forewarned, that when you confront all this without the understanding of his teaching, you will be afflicted. You will suffer. You will become miserable. So what are these eight realities? The Buddha said, birth, old age, sickness, and death. These are the first four very common reality. If you live life long enough, you will confront them. Birth of a newborn baby or a child. Then our own birth. Wherever there is birth, the Buddha said, there will be old age, sickness, and death. These are suffering. Suffering will actually follow. So with birth come old age, sickness, and death. And old age, sickness, and death, as we all know, whoever who confront them without the wisdom and the understanding, they will suffer. They will be afflicted. They will be miserable. That's why it's not easy to confront old age, sickness, and death without wisdom, without the Dhamma understanding. So this aspect of the teaching is very important. And according to the Buddha, the five daily contemplation that he advised all the monks and the devotees to contemplate, the first four actually deal with this physical body. The first three is the most pertinent. He said, this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick, and die, for it has not gone beyond old age, sickness, and death. But this physical body, make our element, is not real, not what we think. It's not an unchanging, eternal entity, a permanent unchanging entity that we can say, this is me, this is I. This one, make of element, goes the way of nature. That's why it's subject to decay, aging, disease, sickness, and death. So this one pertains to the physical form. So when you understand that this physical form is impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity, not you, then you got no more problem. You will not worry about the physical body getting old, getting sick, and die. Because this one is not you. Then you will know how to make use of this physical body to support you to live life, to experience life, to cultivate the teaching, to do whatever you want. It's like a vehicle for you to come to this existential world, to live life, to experience life, and for you to use, make full use of. So use it. It's like a vehicle. Then the mind is like a tool, karmically condition us, condition out for us to come to this existential world. And this teaching is very profound. Very few people understand. That's why I say Buddhists are very blessed. Our teaching is very, very interesting. Not like what people say, boring and all this thing. Every time I talk about suffering. No, we are taught to be careful about this eight reality because it will condition suffering if we lack wisdom and understanding. That's why this teaching is very unique, very profound. It can lead to great transformation, wisdom, understanding. No more suffering, no more misery. Then you can turn this around and ask those people of other religion and ask them, how do they confront birth, old age, sickness, and death? Are they able to? If their fundamental belief is taken off, do they have the wisdom to confront this reality and yet be at peace without fear? There is no fear of death, sickness, disease, especially now COVID-19 and all the various traumatic diseases like HIV, heart attack, kidney failure, and even what they call dementia and all those things. There are a lot of traumatic disease like stroke. Then chronic disease like depression. And also we, through science, through the medical field, we start to come across more and more pandemic that can be very devastating, that can lead to a lot of death A lot of suffering, misery, it can affect economic activity. And nowadays, worldwide, even all your tour, your flight, they are affected. Even people's daily life become different. That's why everybody is talking about the new normal after we return from the pandemic scare or trend. Then, don't know whether there will be vaccine or not. But the world with the human mind will evolve and they will go through. And the Dhamma is very beautiful where it explains all this. When condition is like that, things will be like that. It will unfold because of the way humanity has developed their civilization, their evolution of society. A lot of pollution to the atmosphere, to the environment, that a lot of activity that human being did actually create a condition for this evolution of consciousness to go this way. That's why this type of disease will arise, pandemic can arise. And this is to teach humanity a lesson. With the lockdown, with the MCO, we can see actually all the river, the environment, they get cleaned up without paying a single cent. Why must you go all the way to pay so much money to develop all this project, purification of river, cleaning up of river? Just stop the pollution, the dumping of toxic waste, and all the sewage or whatever, things that not supposed to go into the environment, the carbon discharge and all those things. Yeah. We need to deal with all this as a human race, humanity. That's why the Buddha's teaching is very wonderful. That apart from the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha also said, we pay respect, reverential salutation by recalling to mind the great qualities of the Buddha and all the great beings. We are not worshipping any idol. This is not blind faith. This is faith born of understanding. Because our teacher, all the great beings, they are very unique beings. They have cultivated for eons and eons of lifetime. Or billions and billions and billions of birth and death. Then over this period of cultivation, they perfected themselves wisdom-wise, virtue-wise. That's why they have this clear understanding. And because of our understanding of their uniqueness, we have great respect for them. We have great gratitude towards them. That's the reason why we pay our respect. We honor them. We develop the homage. Reverential salutation. And this helped us to develop the very strong faith, Sadha, in him. And we recall his great qualities, the nine great virtue, and his teaching, which is so wonderful, so beautiful, that can lead us all out of suffering, that can transform humanity from the heedless way of living life to the heedful way of living life. And life can become so beautiful, so wonderful. This is the beauty of the Buddha's teaching. So if you have this understanding, you will know how to confront all those religious critics who doesn't understand Buddhism, who doesn't understand the Dhamma, the teaching as taught by the Buddha. Then not only the first four reality, the Buddha said in life, as we go through life, we need to confront many things. The fifth reality is separation. This one is also very important, the Buddha said. Separation from our loved ones, our prized possession, our property, our wealth, our reputation, and everything that we hold on to dearly. So this fifth reality, separation, is a very wide topic. The very immediate understanding of separation, the first aspect is death. when there is death. Death can be due to many things. Death of a breadwinner, death of a loved one, death occurring through disease, sickness, nature's disaster, war, tsunami, riots, and also abuses, kidnap and other things. Violence. Then we have also witnessed a lot of building collapse, earthquake, tsunami, and many other nature's disaster, even hurricane, typhoon. Yeah. They wreak havoc, and death can occur anytime. Yeah. And apart from death, which is the most traumatic, separation can also be very traumatic. Separation from your loved ones, especially from spouse, when your marriage develop problem, or even those who are not married, when your relationship, girlfriend, boyfriend, decide to break up. Yeah. It can be very traumatic. There is a lot of envy, jealousy, suffering, and misery that come with separation from loved one. Then sometimes it's between parents and children. Then sometimes it's between your brothers and sisters, your good friends, your colleague, your good neighbor. So separation can happen in many, many ways. Then during economic crisis, there can also be separation. When you make a wrong decision in life, it could be an investment or whatever. Then during the economic crisis or currency crisis or COVID-19 pandemic crisis, there are many types of crises. When it hit, it will affect a lot of people's businesses, cash flow, wealth, investment. It may lead to stock market upheaval, collapse, and many other things. Then businesses that cannot actually tie over because of all this crisis, they will have to have what they call bankruptcy. They will go for chapter 11 and they will file for bankruptcy and all those things. So separation can be very traumatic in that sense. Then not only your wealth, your investment, your property, sometimes things that you hold on to dearly, your possession, they may also be wiped off because of crisis. Sometimes stolen or plundered off. That if you have a lot of business or wealth in the form of air travel or even shipping, certain type of crisis can really wipe you off. Yeah. Then also those that have investment in all the various currency and equity and all the various derivative and instrument. So if you are not careful, if you make the wrong decision, if it's because of currency crisis or certain type of crisis, your investment can be completely wiped off. And during that time, a lot of people suffer. They become miserable, afflicted. And many committed suicide. Yeah. Then many really have to face very severe affliction, misery. So all this shows to us the wisdom of the Buddha's teaching, the extent of suffering that can actually inflict human beings. The fifth one, there are many other more examples, but we, I think, have covered it now. Then we go to the number six. The sixth reality is the Buddha said, when you are with people whom you don't like, suffering can also arise. And this reality is very common. Who are the people whom we don't like? Those who are married, maybe not all, some. They are very scared of their in-law, mother-in-law. And sometimes father-in-law. Then also you have people who actually bully you, take advantage of you when you are at the office or working, your career life, when you don't have good bosses or superior, when you are being managed by those bosses or CEO or superior that are not difficult, are not easy to be with, especially those who harass you, who actually put pressure on you. So we call it those who manage by, they use this word, what? They stress you out, then they harass you. Fear, yeah. They put fear in you. Management by fear and harassment. They give you a deadline. Then they put fear in you. They threaten you to dismiss you or to take disciplinary action against you or to give you a very bad performance report and hurt us. So all this can trigger off fear, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. So management by fear and harassment is very negative. If you do that to people, karmic-wise, in future, you will reap what you sow and you become the victim. So avoid that. Don't do that. But in this world, it's different. There are many bosses who really go by that. They even go for management course and training. How to squeeze almost everything out of their staff. Very few bosses have the what they call kindness and understanding that will enable them to treat their staff very well. Because most of them who don't have the Dhamma understanding, they are only interested in profit, dollar and cent. And they are not so keen about their environment or the welfare of the staff and their subordinate. So when you confront all this, you have to understand, according to the Buddha, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma condition, supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So you have such bosses. It means in the past, you must have done this to your subordinate and other people. That's why now you become the victim. So you can check in life. Like for my case, I never did that. That's why my life is very smooth. Everywhere I go, I don't have such problem. And they are very nice to me. And I find them interesting. Then I also treat them very well. That's why you can see all this. These are nature's law, law of karma. So this aspect of the teaching is very beautiful, which very few Buddhists or Dharma practitioners understand. If you understand all this, you can actually share with other people. Then you can defend yourself when they try to criticize our Buddhist teaching or religion. But avoid misunderstanding or argument. That one is very important. When there is condition to explain, to let people understand, then do it following Noble Eightfold Path with understanding, then no more problem. Then apart from this, when you are with people whom you don't like, is school children, or young kids. When they are in the school, they have this, they call bullies, bullies or gangsterism in school. Their life will also be miserable. These are the people whom they find very difficult to confront because they will go after all these kids and demand money, take advantage of them. They call it what, extortion. They extort the extortion. They extort the kids, the school children. And there was one parent whose children in form 3, form 4, having this problem, came and see me, then I helped them to resolve it amicably. Then after that, the son recovered, and they were very happy. Then I think 1 or 2 years later, they came to HABA and listened to my talk, and the son also came, the parents also came, and they thanked me. Yeah, later on, the son graduated. So the advice I given them was very good. And they managed to resolve it. They did what they had to do. Okay, then we move on. The seventh one is when you cannot get what you want, the Buddha said, suffering will arise. And this is a common reality in life. What are the occasions that leads to this? When you cannot get what you want. You see, in life, as an individual, we have a lot of expectation in life. So when our expectation in life are not met, we will be afflicted. We will become unhappy. When things don't go your way, especially those working, you expect to be promoted but didn't get promoted. What happened? You develop unhappiness. There's sometimes jealousy, also envy, where you think the other colleague who get promoted do not deserve it. You think you are better. Then also, sometimes you have expectation of your own brothers or own sister or your own parents to understand you, to love you, to show that type of special like affection or to be like, because you are related, to be special in treatment towards you. But then because of other circumstances and reasons which you do not know, because you are being selfish, you expect people to understand you, to love you. Then when you don't receive all those respect or love, you become very unhappy. And I have seen a lot of people going through this. They went into depression after something happened. After their loved one passed away, then they realized their own brother and sister, they were not so close to them. They say instead, the sincere ordinary friend visit them, comfort them, help them. But their own brothers and sister seldom come and help and see them. And they can develop anger, hatred, jealousy out of this. That's why this is a very dangerous thing. The mind that doesn't understand develop all this. And you suffer for nothing. It's not to say they don't love you, they don't care for you, because they don't know that you have such problem. And they also might not know you don't have the Dhamma understanding. Then also, it depends if they themselves also suffer, what do you expect them to do? So unless you have the Dhamma, you cannot really avoid all this type of reality where you are with people whom you don't like, and when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met. So all this will lead to suffering. So in life, we have a lot of expectation. We expect to do well in the exam. Then the result come out, you didn't perform that well. You expect to do well in the audition, in the interview. But then it turned out the other way. So what happened? When things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, you suffer. You become afflicted. So this reality is very common. So expectation in life, you have to understand. Contentment is a great virtue to free you from this number seven type of reality. Then after number seven, we have the eighth one, the last one. This one, if the first seven also doesn't cover that aspect of your life, and then the eighth one will cover. Yeah, the eighth one is a final summary. The Buddha said, in short, this one, the final summary is very important. It is through your own self-delusion, sakkha-ditti, that grabs on to this five aggregate of form and mind that I call dukkha, upadana khandas, the grasping aggregates. Yeah. And the meaning is very deep. The Buddha said, each and every one of us, we are a human being. We have a physical body. We have a mind, consciousness trapped inside. So he defined this human being as a five aggregate. First, as a human being, first aspect, we have a physical body. This is the first aspect of the five aggregate. This is the form aggregate, rupa, physical body. Then we have a mind, he said, trapped inside, consciousness. He subdivided into four more aggregates. He said, to understand this four aggregate of mind, you have to inquire what can your mind do. Then you will understand. And this is a beautiful Buddhist teaching. We have covered it in the first chapter, I think, the first lesson of the Heart Sutta. But I will repeat this for this session recording, where it's very important. This mind, the Buddha said, can do four very important things. That's why he separate them out as aggregate. He said, your mind can feel hot or cold. It can feel pleasant or unpleasant. So it has this feeling aggregate, which is called Vedana. Vedana, feeling. Then, what else can your mind do? Your mind can perceive things. They can perceive what you see, the color, shape, and form. They can perceive my voice, vibration, sound, music. All these are the power of mind to perceive. They can also perceive smell, taste, tactile, and thought process. So this ability of the mind to perceive is a very important aggregate, the Buddha said. And through this aggregate of perception, he said, we can bring in the external form into the mind. Everything we come to perceive is the external form, like the Buddha image at the back, the voice that you hear from my sharing. And whatever you perceive through your seeing consciousness, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought consciousness, they are the external rupa or form that the mind brings into the consciousness as a content of consciousness. So this sanya aggregate, which is perception, brings the external form into the mind. And that one is very important understanding. Yeah, we need it to understand the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. Then what else can our mind do? Since we have gone through life, we know the mind can think, isn't it? Think a lot, isn't it? The mind can make mental intention, isn't it? The mind can plan, can conceive, can develop mental states, can experience mental states of peacefulness or fear, sorrow, anxiety, envy, jealousy. All these mind states are qualities of mind. Then we can also become, we can also have the ability to create mental formation, mental images. So all this that I have described, the Buddha called it sankhara. Or to make it easier to understand, I call it the content of consciousness. Everything that your mind can do, including your planning, scheming, and whatever. Yeah. Including feeling and perception, they are sankhara. So sankhara is actually everything that your mind can do, the whole content of consciousness. Yeah. The first two aggregates of feeling and perception is separated, but these are very important aggregate that the Buddha need to explain in the teaching. Yeah. Then finally, the Buddha explained to us, there is one more
very important function of mind. What else can our mind do apart from thinking, planning, and other things? Having the feeling and perception. Our mind can be conscious. It is capable of being conscious. Conscious of what we see. Conscious of what we hear, smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. So this power of mind to be conscious is the most important. That's why consciousness is the last of the four mind aggregates. So we have feeling, perception, sankhara, and consciousness, which is vijnana. So vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana. These four plus the physical form become the five aggregates of form and mind. This is the first aspect. The Buddha say you attach to this physical body and the four aggregates of mind through self-delusion, ignorance, you will suffer. Suffering will come to be. You can put them to test. You can investigate into them. If I attach to this physical body thinking it's mine, do I suffer? Yes, I will suffer. Because you will worry about this physical body getting old, getting sick and die. That's the reason why you cannot attach, you cannot cling. You must develop the wisdom, the contemplative wisdom and the meditative wisdom to see clearly that this form and mind, they are impermanent. They are dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of not. Not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. Impossible. And because of that, that wisdom can liberate us. Then we will not attach. If we attach to our feeling, we also suffer. That's why we have pleasant and unpleasant feeling. We have like and dislike. These are the influence of greed and hatred. We tend to have craving for good feeling. Then we don't like painful feeling, negative feeling. Yeah. So likewise, perception also same. The things that we come to perceive or know, the external form, because our ignorance, our sakyadity, we tend to attach and cling to what we perceive. Then when we cannot get what we want, we suffer. That's why if you attach to perception, you will suffer. Like you perceive your school. You perceive yourself as a Chinese. Your race as Buddhism. Oh, sorry, race as Chinese. Your religion or belief system is Buddhism or something. So when you perceive that, what happened? Yeah? You suffer, isn't it? Because that perception will actually condition you into that. It will create the entity. Then whatever that differs from that, you will have problem. That's why the word divine. One word, race, divine. Religion, divine. Then gender, also divine. Then belief system, also divine. Nationality, also divine. So everything that we come to perceive, like our school, then we tend to attach to our school. We tend to have that thought of glorifying our school. Then protecting our school's reputation and other things. So you must check, put to test all this. Feeling and perception, if you attach, you suffer. Then similarly, sankhara, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your mind state. If you attach to good meditative mind state, then the negative one, the not so pleasant one, you will have suffering. You will have misery. Then all of the good, wholesome, you attach. Whatever that is not good, not wholesome, you will have suffering. That's why you cannot attach. Sankara anicang, sankara dukkang, dhamma anatta. See the universal characteristic that awaken to it. Then you will not be deceived. You will not attach. You will not cling. Because according to the Buddha, all these five aggregates, they are impermanent. If you want them your way, which is not nature's way, it will tend towards suffering. That's why the universal characteristics are there. And because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent and genuine entity. That's why it is not real, non-self, empty, not what you think. So this anicchang dukkang anatta characteristic is very important. That if we attach to consciousness, the thing that we become conscious of, that's why the Buddha said the analogy of consciousness is like a magician. You will also suffer because attachment and craving lead to suffering. When things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, suffering comes to be. So all these five aggregate of form and mind, you will see clearly you cannot attach. Yeah. So everything we come to know and do in life has to do with these five aggregate of form and mind, isn't it? That's why it covers all aspects of life. Yeah. So the first aspect is mundane reality. That's why it explains the reality of life and existence, the first noble truth. Then the second aspect of this five aggregate of form and mind is very important. He said every moment of sense door activity, every moment of seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought process, the five aggregates of form and mind are also there. Because every arising of consciousness, the four aggregate of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana is there. Then the external form that you bring into the mind through perception become the fifth aggregate. That's how the Paticca Samuppada link comes to be. So when you understand the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, you can understand through mindfulness the 12 link, the Paticca Samuppada, the law of dependent origination. That's the reason why this teaching is so beautiful, so profound. Then the Buddha moved on to the second noble truth. He said, all this suffering that he described under the first noble truth, there is a cause behind because you lack wisdom. Because you lack wisdom, you give rise to self-delusion. It conditions craving, grasping, clinging. You try to own, you try to possess. And when you cannot get what you want, you become emotional. The evil is of greed, hatred, and delusion. It arises. Then when you cannot understand, there is fear, there is worry, there is anxiety when you project your thought. So all this is part and parcel of the teaching. So craving is the cause of suffering. And there are three types of craving. Sensual craving, craving to be, and craving not to be. In Pali, it's called karma tanha. Craving is tanha. Then bhava tanha is craving to become something. Then vibhava tanha is craving not to become anything. So these three types of craving will condition suffering. You can put to test. You can investigate into it. And it's very beautiful. So if I know the first noble truth, the reality of life and existence, means the mundane reality of life, then I know the cause behind my suffering. I will know how to manage my life, isn't it? I will know how to take care of my life, isn't it? If I know the cause of arising of suffering, then I can manage my life. Suffering may not be when I understand. So I will develop the cultivation of the teaching to liberate my mind, to free, to become enlightened, awakened. So this is how the teaching comes to be. So first two noble truth is the mundane aspect, but the third and the fourth noble truth leads to the supramundane aspect of life. So under the third noble truth, the Buddha explained very beautifully. He said, suffering need not be, because under this third noble truth, there is a noble truth of cessation of dukkha. Dukkha can end when you can realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. Means this teaching can lead to enlightenment in the here and the now before you die. That's the reason why suffering need not be. If you can cultivate this teaching and awaken before you die, then you can live the life of a noble one, an enlightened one. You can live the beautiful life of a noble being. And this is the beauty of his teaching. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Life is no longer suffering. Suffering need not be, the Buddha said. So this is so beautiful. That's why if you understand his teaching, you can actually realize the enlightenment in the here and the now, which is Nibbana. Nibbana is the unconditioned. You can realize the supramundane unconditioned enlightenment. And that is the supramundane aspect of life. Then the Buddha didn't stop there. He even teach you how to develop the cultivation of this enlightenment. He moved on to the fourth noble truth. He said there is a fourth noble truth that explained to us clearly what enlightenment is. He said if you were to cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now. So noble eightfold path is the cultivation, is the meditation. So if you can cultivate this noble eightfold path, which has eight beautiful path factors, you will become noble ones. You will become very noble in your understanding of life. That is what the path factor of samadhi or right view is all about. The first path factor, where you have right view with regards to the nature's law that governs life and existence, the panchaniyama, you will have wisdom to understand life and to live life. That's why you become different. You are very noble in all aspects of understanding of life. That's why you can live life. You can become enlightened. So noble eightfold path is very powerful. From right view, right understanding, you can condition right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right effort. And these are very beautiful qualities of mind. Path factor, which are very noble. You are very noble in the way you arise your thought, in the way you communicate with people, in the way you act, in the way you actually speak. Then in the way you live your life. Then you will arise the four right effort to constantly purify and develop the avoidance of evil, development of wholesomeness. Then you will train your mind to be mindful. Stabilize it to be ever mindful, then develop samadhi, which is the last of the noble eightfold path factor, to develop the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind, so that you can see things as they are in the midst of life, so that your mind will not stir, will not react to sense experience. Then you can see things as they are to awaken, to develop the wisdom. And this is how the noble eightfold path can transform us and make us beautiful, wonderful, enlightened. So discover the beauty of the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of his teaching. And this is the teaching beautifully summarized into just Four Noble Truths. And within this, like I explained, you can understand all of life. It's like the secret of life. All of life, both the mundane and supramundane, they are there. They are so beautifully described there. So the Buddhist teaching is very unique. The Buddha's teaching is really, really profound, unique, and beautiful. So with this understanding, hopefully in future, you all can stand up to defend our Buddhist teaching, our glorious religion. So we are no longer like what people say, we only teach suffering. No. We teach the prevalence of suffering. We warn people that suffering is everywhere if you don't have this teaching to help you, to awaken you, to enable you to confront them, so that you need not suffer. Okay? So this will cover that aspect of the Dhammapada verse. Oh, now I will read through the rest of 2.3.
then you can understand very easily already. Huh? The Buddha instead proclaimed that there is a First Noble Truth that explains clearly the prevalence of suffering, based what dukkha or suffering is. And according to Lord Buddha, there are 8 realities of life and existence that can give rise to suffering when one confronts them without wisdom. So this one I have covered very comprehensively, very widely. And this one can be used to help Buddhists who are new to the religion so that they have the understanding and they will develop the interest and the pride to be a Buddhist. We should thank our good karma. So as a Buddhist, we are in fact very, very blessed, very wonderful to have such a great teacher like Sakyamuni Buddha. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. He is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. Yeah. And his teaching is so beautiful, so profound, so wonderful. Yeah. And I will read on. The 8 realities are birth, old age, sickness, and death. When you are with people whom you don't like, when there is separation from your loved one and your prized possession, things that you hold on to dearly, when you cannot get what you want, or when things don't go your way, etc. No matter who you are and how wealthy you are and how powerful you are, if you live long enough, you will confront all this above reality of life and existence. The Buddha then went on to proclaim that there is a cause behind all suffering. And the cause is always craving, born of self-delusion, sacrality. This is the second noble truth. Then under the third noble truth, the Buddha says suffering need not be because there is a noble truth that explains the possibility of enlightenment in the here and the now. Cessation of suffering in the here and the now can be realized. Then finally, the Buddha taught the Noble Eightfold Path, the fourth noble truth, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. And if one cultivates this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering or misery or dukkha. So we have covered very comprehensively the four noble truth, and this is something that is very important for Buddhists. Or cultivator of the way. Now we go to the part 3. Part 2.4. There are some definitions. This word 自在, at ease. The meaning in Mandarin is me in the moment. 在 is you are here in the moment. 自 is me, you, the personality. The atta. And it means at ease. False thinking means heedless thinking. I don't know why they use the Mandarin word ta wang xiang. False thinking. Like wang yi. Wang yi. It means when you lie. Then wang xiang. False thinking. Means not the heedful thinking. The heedless thinking. Then one is not right here or aware within, it means you are lost in thought. So awareness is very important. Awareness is mindfulness. The first pronunciation is jue. Jue. This is enlightenment. Jue. Jue wu. Means enlightenment. And the second sound is jiao. Jiao means stir up trouble. So you have to be careful. One is jue, one is jiao. Then part 3, meditation. Training of the mind to be heedful, 2-step. We are mind sweeping method plus metta or the 6R or any skillful means, object of meditation. You can select any of these. The other way is to cultivate 5 spiritual faculty, then you don't have to do all these things. Then finally, silence your mind to be aware or heedful within. we are relinquishing the object of meditation. That is, mind is constantly meditative and ever mindful to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Means that mind is a free mind that is just aware. That's why relax, aware, and maintain for as long as you can. The mind sweeping method is a very good and useful, skillful means to train the mind to be at the location you want it to be. That is the first training. Because mind sweeping method starts with the forehead. If you want to be at the forehead, the mind will go there. It means you train the mind to be at that location which you want it to be. Then you ask it to feel. Because the mind must do something, otherwise it will wander off. That's why you anchor it there. You give it some duty to feel. Feel, relax. Feel, relax. No more thinking. So you continue to do that through the mind sweeping method. You are actually deconditioning your heedless thinking. Means you are moving into a kind of cultivation where you just feel and relax your mind. Then it settles down very fast. You don't believe me, you can try. Especially those who have a lot of heedless thinking. And you do it slowly. Feel, relax. Then sweep it down. Facial muscle again, feel, relax. Eye muscle, sorry. Then facial muscle, strip by strip. You move it down slowly. Then after that, radiate a radiant smile. Then continue until your buttock. If you do it one round, you will see the big difference. It will decondition your heedless thinking and your mind become very quiet. Unless you got nothing to do, then the thinking starts again. But if you are familiar, the mind sweeping method can make you very calm and very peaceful very fast. I will read to you the mind sweeping method. Mind sweeping method is a very good and very useful, skillful means to train the mind to be at the location you want it to be. And it also trains you to feel and not to think. That's why feel, relax. Then you continue to relax whatever tension, tightness, or stress within that location that you are feeling, like your forehead, etc., to enable you to be in that state of relaxed inner awareness. That is what my meditation is all about. Relax, maintain inner awareness. To realize the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the peacefulness of mind, the quietness of mind, and the calmness within. When there is no more thinking, then your mind will become peaceful, at ease, and without thought after deconditioning it from your habitual heedless thinking and worrying, etc. So try it. This is a very good way. So we finish, yeah? Okay, good. So at least we cover one chapter. So we stop here. We will open up for meditation, reporting, and Q&A. While I have a drink. Anybody wants to report meditation or ask any question, you can just wave your hand or you come in. Anybody? Oh, we have 25 of us. Anybody? Don't be shy. Make full use of it. How is today sharing? Is it clear? No response. Ananda respond. Two thumb up. Bagus. Very good. Sadhu. Anybody wants to say something or report meditation or maybe ask any question? Just come in. We still have 15 minutes. Anybody? Huh? Nobody. Then what do you want me to do? End early. Okay. If there is nobody, then maybe we end. Huh? Okay. Then we will do the sharing of merits. Answer of merit. Akasata Chabumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anamoditoa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana Itta Wata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anamodantu Sabasampati Siddhiya Idang Menyatinang Hotu Sukita hontu nyateyo, idang me nyati nang hotu. Sukita hontu nyateyo, idang me nyati nang hotu. Sukita hontu nyateyo. Devo statu kalena, sasa sampati hetu ce, pito bawatu loko ce, raja bawatu damiko. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia sadu sadu sadu. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah? You can pay respect to Sakyamuni Buddha and the worthy ones, and we end our session. Huh? You end the recording first. Thank you.